only if the rules or the controls were actually more aware of the user, its roles and context. The way you could do is adding more complex. You're going to take that policy, you create another more policy to manage. This is just for the developer. This is for the trading machine. This is for that machine. You end up so many policies. You make one policy change and it goes in hierarchy. Sometimes your hierarchy is readjusted accidentally. You're going to create another outage again. All the lower ones that actually just inherited that. So a lot of challenges.
You're listening to Protect It All, where Aaron Crowe expands the conversation beyond just OT, delving into the interconnected worlds of IT and OT cybersecurity. Get ready for essential strategies and insights. Here's your host, Aaron Crowe.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of the Protect It All podcast. I just get to have these amazing conversations with different people and different perspectives and different experiences from around the globe. And I really appreciate people taking the time to join me in this journey and have these conversations. So let's just dive into it. Why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, a little bit about your background, your history, and kind of anything you want to share with the audience to get us rolling.
Sure. Thank you. Glad to be here. My name is Sharad Rai. Actually started my journey as a systems engineer integration. So worked with Windows, Linux a lot, and also worked with, when I came in US in year 2000, I didn't have the privilege to actually work for the very large organizations. So I worked for the small to medium companies. That also includes a private school in Manhattan. So pretty much I was the go-to guy in IT. I was doing server installations, firewall implementations, switcher, layer three switches, pretty much everything, site-to-site VPNs. So inadvertently, that actually gave me such a big outlook about how what IT really is. I'm seeing every single aspect, what ports are actually, you know, what port forwarding is, how packets actually travel. So when I came into security, it was like everything pre-served to me. I was directly, relate everything directly to that vulnerability. I know exactly, okay, that's where I should look at. So, you know, when I was doing everything, I was enjoying too, but at the same time, I mean, you know, doing firewall implementation, adding rule access rules on the firewall, that's not interesting. But as it has it, I mean, it helped me so much with my security career so far. That's pretty much it. And I actually got into security in 2014 with my big break from Morgan Stanley. I was part of the endpoint engineering operations. So we were managing, you know, AV antiviruses, FireEye Mandiant for threat hunting, Symantec antivirus corporate edition, large 300,000 endpoints to manage, including servers. 20,000 may just be servers there. A lot of in-case for forensics, case for forensics again. There are a lot of tools and packages. As you can see, it's very fragmented. And the issue we used to run into, I actually ran into because those products were under my purview. But again, I was good with always innovation, automation, kind of a lazy guy, because if he asked me to do something repetitively, I'm going to write a script or something. So that really helped out dealing with antivirus agents actually getting disconnected from the server every time. So that would skew the results. And the results are actually monitored by the senior management. And the question would always come out, oh, what is wrong with this antivirus? Your agents actually go offline. Are we really protected? And the problem with that is actually agents may be running. It just missed one or two heartbeats. Why? Later, I mean, you know, servers under capacity, you know, the traffic's actually choking on the gateways. Perimeter networks are not. So it was 2000, early 2014, 15, I'm talking about. So I had to actually come up with a very innovative idea and solution myself, which I built. Very basic PowerShell based, implemented to all, you know, worked with the man, with my manager. He liked the idea. And then we took it through the architecture approvals, just proved them that this additional layer actually not going to add any more resource or CPU. It's not going to eat much more what that is already there. So it's a very basic PowerShell-based script-based solution. So that actually helped. And then came in EDR, Tanium. Oh my God, that's a world of difference. all these fragmented endpoint apps is now combined in one. And I had the privilege and the honor actually really rolling out the EDR to the whole endpoint base. Everything was unified. If we have a little incident over at one of the endpoints somewhere in the world, right? So the only way you could do any kind of work investigation is that either you call that local support guy or you do remote telnet, and that connection is not always available to you. It's actually blocked at the firewall level. So those were the painful days for us. But the EDR came in with those tools built in. You just go there back to, you know, so EDR layer actually transports that RDP session. You just do whatever you have to do without actually, while the users are even using the machine. So that's the EDR era. Any question you might just jump in and ask?
No, I mean, that's awesome. You know, coming from, it's similar to my background, very different, but also very similar in that, you know, starting from that bottom, right? You know, I talk to people all the time that are wanting to get into cybersecurity or they're wanting to get into this and that because everybody's talking about cyber right now, right? So it's like, how do I get into cyber? How do I do this? It seems really cool. Like you watch the movies and you see the hackers and you see things on the news. It seems really interesting. A lot of the stuff we do is just boring. It's monotonous. It's not all that sexy and right. Cool. But you know, it really comes down to be a good practitioner in cyber, you really need to have a foundational baseline understanding of the things that you're supporting and that you're trying to protect, right? You know, from a network layer, from an application layer, OSI model, you need to know all the layers, all the seven layers of the OSI model and where it could be. And, you know, I used to tell my guys when we were, you know, looking at things is you always start troubleshooting at the lowest layer of the OSI model because you don't start troubleshooting the application before you make sure, is it plugged in? Like the IT crowd, that show, you know, have you turned it on and off again? Like it's so funny, but there's a reason why the first thing you do is reboot it to see if it fixes the problem because so many times it does.
Yeah, if a machine is infected, you can't do anything about it. At least you can ask somebody, hey, go unplug that machine. So that's right? Isolation.
Exactly. So from that foundation and growing through, you know, kind of transitioning into cybersecurity, using all of those, you know, previous experiences that you had coming into this, like what are the types of things that you see focusing on now and the things that you came from your previous experiences that are benefiting, you know, the things for you to, you know, see the next problem or select the next solution or remediate these issues? Like what are the things that are coming up to you on a frequent basis in your day-to-day job or the life of a, you know, cyber practitioner?
Actually, I can recount my days as consultant. The type of problems actually thrown at me when I joined any company as a contractor. Well, I always work for the major banks. So would be, you know, users actually using unauthorized applications, downloading of their own, using them. So banks have no clues what applications are actually being used by the users. So one of the assignment was actually to me, can you please blacklist those applications that are dangerous? And that was my first assignment. And I said, sure, yeah, give me your approved list. And there was a tool. They just enrolled, but they didn't know how to go about it. They just enrolled. They had, and I said, yeah, given the list, it's very easy. You just create a policy and deploy to the endpoints. And the answer was, we don't have that list. So they don't have a list of authorized versus unauthorized software. And now you have to be very creative about that. So do you have a SIM? At the end, that was my question. Do you have any kind of SIM? Yeah, they have Elastic. I said, okay, that'll work. Are you getting all the logs into the SIM? Yes, I am. So I can see what users are actually using on their machines. Yes, you can. So that's where my go-to, I started digging, you know, have all the data actually come on the same, export it out in this Excel. And, you know, there are a lot of third-party tools, VirusTotal, et cetera. You can actually back. First of all, you see how many Office standard applications are there. You just simply filter them out. Because they are good applications. And then you just go on identify. And I had two guys actually working on this project. So that was fun project. One is, again, whitelisting versus blacklisting. Other could be, MFAs, SSOs. I usually get, and then the log visibility and plus.
The problem, just to double click on what you just talked about, right, is I see that problem all the time. They want us to block the things that are bad. but they don't know what good is. It's hard to block bad if you don't know what good is. And you know, yes. I work in critical infrastructure, but it's not just there. It's not just OT. It's everywhere. Like, if you don't know what good behavior looks like, how do you categorize or search for bad behavior? Like, you're hoping you're maybe if there's a, you know, obviously blacklisting and we're looking for patterns and things like that. But again, you need to get down to a level where you understand what normal behavior, what normal good behavior is. So that way you can baseline that thing. You know what to block, whether it's, hey, these are good applications or these are devices I'm used to or they should be able to communicate with, all the way down to these are ports of protocols that they're allowed to communicate with and what and how much, what is payload sizes and what's, you know, all there's so much that goes into that, which yeah, right. is exciting yeah. with AI coming on how much it can alleviate and start looking at some of those things and building those patterns. But
right.
most owners of assets and or applications don't truly understand their application to the level that they can actually tell us security practitioners how to help them lock it down.
Right. Yeah. So the final list actually, so I gave them back saying, and you know, this is going to be your list of authorized, I mean, use this to finalize your list. So anyway, the second was too many alerts, false alerts.
Yeah.
False positives. Yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, I mean, the signal was either not written properly. So at one place I noticed, and this came from the side, I'm doing this, and the MS Cert team, which is the blue team, the lead actually came to me saying, hey, I'm on the endpoint side, and he's saying, can you guys help us? And this was one of his pain points, because he's been asking, but nobody was actually paying any attention to him. So can you help us cleaning out your alerts, endpoint alerts? Because it's just so much that people, yeah, I mean, and I looked at it and they're like inundated with the alerts. So the problem is, and it's a bank, not yeah. an American bank, but, and I was like, how could you even tell this is a bad alert yeah. or the good alert? So, yeah, again, I took my own initiative, worked with those teams, had a daily or maybe weekly cadence, looked at those sensors, each and every single sensor, have those endpoint engineers work with me, and then those blue teams. We looked at each sensor every, I think every day or weekly, I forgot, but we eventually cleaned it. They were so happy. So, yeah.
And that's a big piece too, right? Is it's easy to look in cybersecurity, especially now. There's tools for everything, and all these tools are great tools. You know, EDR tools and SIEMs and blacklists and whitelists and all the different things that do all the different cool stuff. But if you're not tuning them, you're just getting alarm fatigue, and you'll flood your SIEM, you'll flood your SOC, you'll flood your screens, and then you're finding a needle in a stack of needles. Like, how do you even know what to look at? You can't process, you can't even consider to find, you know, it's like you're getting spammed by your own systems and you don't know what's good or what's yes. bad. Like, it's just, you're getting overloaded. So, you know, as a practitioner, you want to just send all the information, because you're like, well, more information is better than less, right? In theory, you're right. But when you don't know, again, it goes back to what I said a minute ago. If you don't know what good looks like, then you don't know how to search and find bad. So if you overload your system with a whole bunch of data, then you don't know how to find and what to look for. So it's better to ramp it slowly and turn things off and ignore things. Not ignore, but you really should be setting your threshold so you're only alerting. The actual term alert should only be when things are outside of normal threshold or getting close to outside of normal threshold, right?
Right,
I'm approaching right. it. I'm getting in the yellow before I get to red. I want to start alerting of, hey, something is, my CPU's up, or I'm sending way too many packets, or I'm getting drop packets, or whatever those things may look like. That's when you need to start looking at that. And that's as much of an art form to security, and we don't talk about it all the time, but that alarm tuning is huge, especially as we start adding all these technologies and tools and monitors and logs, and we're getting logs from all over the place, which is great. But somebody has to understand what to do with all of that data and how right. to make it right. value add to the people that are supposed to be looking and finding something to do right. about
it. Yeah, go from monitoring to alerting and then blocking. Yeah.
Right.
Don't go directly to blocking. I mean, everything was actually coming in as red. You know, that's the biggest problem I have seen. And then XDR rolled in, But again, the quality of the data, what kind of data we are sending, I mean, that will actually say if XDR is going to be effective or not, which is true with the AI as well, how well you are actually training your AI, how clean your data is. So everything is shift left. You really have to work on your quality of data before you actually put this in and slowly just train it on your production data. It doesn't really matter. I mean, don't just go on. Monitor, have the analyst flag them and, you know, slowly mature them. And then eventually you go on alerting on the restrictions. So, yeah, these are the things, you know, credential elevations. Those are the issues always come up. I have seen, you know, those domain controllers wide open. Yeah. For the admins, I mean, and you advise them. It has to be behind some layers of... it can't just be open like a member servers. So you put some MFA or have a CyberArk vault them, those passwords, and rotate them on a constant basis. I've seen not rotating. Yeah. And admins are actually writing down passwords on notepads because they are lazy going into CyberArk and reissuing their passwords. It's the same password for certain hours until it expires and rotates.
Yep.
These are bad behavior. I mean, you know, there are tools, as I said, there are tools. I mean, there are brilliant tools. If you don't put them in the right way, I mean, it's not doing anything for you.
Yep.
You are not improving anything.
That's right. And it's amazing. You hit on something there too. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but you know, it's amazing. And this isn't a jab. This is something that we just need to consider as we're rolling out cyber and technology. And, you know, and I talk about this all the time. It's people, process, and technology. I need all of those things for it to actually be functional and valuable, right? So technology is easy. I can go buy a new product. I can implement it. I can roll it out, all those kind of things. The process is a little bit harder where I have to actually incorporate that into my daily actions and make sure that everybody's using it, it's being done. There's a standard. I'm rolling it out everywhere, all that kind of thing. That people problem, it's not always a problem, but that people aspect is a tricky one. Because people are, to your point, lazy, not always lazy, but they're really, many times they're trying to find a way. Yes, they're working to find a way to do their job, right? So I have a quick story that, you know, I was working in an industrial environment and these people were doing operator rounds and they had those handhelds and they would walk around and, you know, they would check, they would scan an RFID tag that brought up this part on a round and they would enter a temperature or a pressure and they would go to the next space and do it. And it was logging all the different data that they were doing around the facility, right? Yeah. And the data was just not accurate. It just didn't make sense. Like, and we were trying to figure out why the data was so off. Like it'd be a temperature reading and the normal reading would be anywhere from, you know, I don't know, 100 to 500. And the numbers would be like 7,000. How is it 7,000? Like there's no way it could be 7,000. Maybe they typoed it. So like as we started investigating these things, I was at the site and I'm sitting in the break room and I'm watching them. And they're at lunch playing dominoes and they lean back. I see one of the guys and he picks up a handheld off the table. He leans back in his chair and he scans an RFID tag on the wall and he enters some data and he keeps playing dominoes. And I just sit there and watch. And he does it again about a couple of minutes later, scans, does it a couple of minutes later, scans. And finally, about the fifth time he does it, I'm like, can I ask a question? What are you doing? He's like, oh man, I got this operator around right now, but it's during lunch and nobody cares about it anyways. Nobody looks at the data. So he had literally taken an RFID tag for every one of the steps. There was like 30 steps. There were 30 RFID tags and he knew how long it was supposed to take him to get from point A to point B to point C to point D. And he would sit there and he would scan it. And to be fair to him, he was not being lazy because he was absolutely willing to do the work. But he had complained and complained that nobody was paying attention to the operator rounds, that he had put multiple things in and nothing was being done. So they finally got frustrated. They're like, why am I wasting my time when nobody actually cares about the data that I'm putting in? And the irony of it is that is actually the thing that got us to help to change the process because it wasn't being looked at effectively. It wasn't being used and his time was being wasted. Now, I also removed the RFID tags and told him he couldn't freaking do that anymore. But it's funny because people will find a workaround. So you have to make it worth their while. And you also have to consider the human factor in everything that we do, because people will find workarounds to your system by writing their password on a sticky note or resetting their password every time they want to go in. You know, they'll find a way.
They will fail your system.
Yeah.
It's all about user's experience, you know. I mean, whatever you design, you actually think about human layer as well. Otherwise, they're gonna find shortcut around it to doing the same thing. I was doing the same when I was back and not into this IAM and this thing. We would actually check out our password from Hitachi. Hitachi was PAM back then. Then we would write it down because I know it's 8 hours I'm going to have this same password. So as you said, yeah, it's just a convenience, not for the this thing. So anything we design, that's where the product actually comes in, mindset. You think about the user journey, you know, are they going to use it, adaptability? So if the users are going to be happy with this thing, it's not actually working against them, but for them or with them. There's a high likely chance that the good security is actually the security layer that disappears, you know, that does not actually show up. Hey, I'm here. Pop up here, pop up there. Warning here, alert here. The best is actually that disappears. And I think we are entering that era with the AI adaptability of security system that actually just, you know, senses, learns, and do automatic AI, you know, enable response system. So the era is actually from we were gates and guards. Mm-hmm. To guardians, guards and guardians. So we are moving from that time. So I think I lost.
No, it's okay. I mean, I feel you're right. And so long with cyber, we were always the ones that said no. Like we were the ones that resisted. No, you can't do that, or you can't do it that way, or you have to change. And for the longest time, we made processes many times, not always, but many times we made the process more difficult. We made the thing that the user wanted to do or needed to do that much more difficult. And that was because of limitations in technology. And the only way we could make it more secure is by making it more difficult to get in. But that even like, by design, we want it to be difficult for the bad or the people that aren't supposed to be in, not necessarily bad people, but, you know, people that are not supposed to be in this process. But we really don't want to make it harder on the people that are supposed to be in the process. Yeah. But many times up until now, it's been just as difficult whether you're a good guy or a bad guy, because we just had to make it hard because that was the only option we had to put any control in there, right? We had all of these layers and boundaries that you had to jump over, and it was really tedious, and I had to have all these different, you know, stops and steps and all the things. I took a simple two-step process and turned it into a 10-step process. And to your point, that's when it gets difficult. I add time. Time is money, and it makes it more difficult. And there's more things to break, and there's more things to troubleshoot. And it just gets so complex. And to your point, like, I'm excited to hear. I know you just got back from Google and talking about AI and kind of some of the future stuff that's coming out. So I'm excited to hear about that. But, you know, how do you see us removing a lot of those things and making it more streamlined? Because I think that's the future, is how do we make it as simple and painless as possible for the person that we want or the process that we want to be working as it should, and make it super complex and difficult and almost impenetrable for the things that we don't want to take action, the bad actors, the bad processes, that kind of thing. That's where we start winning this battle of cyber, instead of it constantly being an uphill battle of, because nobody wants cyber. Everybody just wants to do their process. And we just sort of like the guy in the corner is like, yeah, we're the problem child, adding complexity and cost to their projects.
True. I think the question is AI, it has to be context-based, contextual. So the user has an identity, and it has a role, and it has that role is defined. The job is actually defined as per that role. So if your controls are really contextual or context-based, it knows who is that user. Like, let's say it's a regular employee versus a developer. And there were instances when we used a software called Avecto. It's a privilege escalation, and we actually created a massive outage for 2,000 plus developers somewhere in the world in Asia. It's because one rule actually works for certain 80-90% of users. It's not going to work for those. So that was the point when I was thinking, if only the rules or the controls were actually more aware of the user, its roles and context. The way you could do is adding more complex. You're going to take that policy, you create another more policy to manage. Yep. This is just for the developer. This is for the trading machine. This is for that machine. You end up so many policies. You make one policy change and it goes in hierarchy. Sometimes your hierarchy is readjusted accidentally. You're going to create another outage again. All the lower ones that actually just inherited that. So a lot of challenges. And I think AI is coming in there, which can understand their context. Oh, the user, you are developer. You actually use Visual Studio. And she's employee because she uses mostly Excel or Outlook or Word document. So the adjustment has to be automatic. You know, so I'm going to open up a little bit more, but I'm going to monitor what you're doing.
Sure.
I'm going to send this, if you do anything new outside of your regular behavior, I'm going to report it, but I'll let you do it as long as it's safe for the environment or for this environment or this machine. So yeah, AI based context based controls are the answer.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's amazing. It's just like looking at something as simple as looking at a log or looking at alert or, you know, transposing a password or anything. It's why, you know, password managers are so much more effective than trying to remember your password. Like it's blown up so much because we have so many user accounts and so many accounts in so many different places. If you don't use a password manager, there's no way your accounts are secure because you're having to remember that, then you're using the same password everywhere. So if somebody owns one site, they own everything, right? You're missing the bar, right? And you add, if you think about with AI and how much more it can look at things, to your point, those super complex, you know, policies that are, you know, hyper, this one's dependent on that. And, you know, even if you're an expert and you built them all with yourself, all it takes is you to miss one thing when you make that adjustment and it breaks everything below it, right? And then you spend hours fixing. Absolutely, right? You spend hours and hours trying to find that needle in a haystack. Yeah, God, that's where it is. It's the same thing as, you know, I remember when I first got into technology way back in the day, right? Even when I was in high school, you know, taking Turbo Pascal programming, it tells you how old I am. But I remember being so frustrated because I'd get syntax wrong. You know, you'd put a comma or a semicolon or something out of space and everything stopped working and you don't know why. And then you're going line by line by line by line until you find that one comma that's in the wrong spot. You fix that and then it starts working and you're just like pulling your hair out because you can't fit. Like it took you 3 hours to find that one comma. Whereas if you fed it to AI, it would spit it out in 2 seconds and say, that comma shouldn't be there.
Yeah. So what a difference.
Absolutely. So what do you see like being the biggest difference that AI can bring in to both the users, you know, as a experience? How do I integrate and how do I become, you know, how do I raise issues or add enhancements, et cetera, but all the way down to a security practitioner as I'm a SOC analyst, as I'm looking at the data, how do you see that, you know, AI being a differentiation in the space?
AI is not a magic bullet, you know, as you know, too. AI is actually going to really help you make decisions faster. It can help you see the issues and also do the analysis. But at the end, the decision is going to be you. AI is going to, there are a lot of saying AI is going to replace analysts or something. No, AI is actually going to augment human judgment and all that. The final judgment, the verdict is still going to be you. It's going to replace only the repetitive process of the analyst, getting the data, you know, getting all the alerts, doing all the investigation of that, where it's actually generating from, who the user is. That's all will be done by the AI. You actually taking a decision saying this is safe or not safe. Yeah, and XDR, which I said earlier, I actually forgot the full term of that. Yeah, XDR is actually behavioral, is completely AI based. You know, if you use certain tools on a regular basis, but one day you actually try to elevate cmd.exe or something or PowerShell, and you don't have the rights to do that. Probably that was an accident, but it's going to be flagged. It may not be restricted. Remember those earlier very hardcore restrictions. They will probably, or maybe he'll find a way, or maybe he was a good guy, you know, a third or fourth attempt he got in. But if you have a very stringent restriction policy, maybe it'll count 1, 2, 3 and you're done. And the guy is going around getting approvals for the unlocking of God. Yeah, those were the days. So I'm very hopeful. And what Google I'm excited about is the Google Chrome is going to be the new endpoint. I mean, that's their vision. When they were explaining, I was like, wow. So the whole mind shift is going to happen. And I'm thinking in terms of desktops or workstation as an endpoint. No, they're saying browser is going to be the endpoint. And I see total merit in it when they say that. They are far ahead. Google is a very innovative company. I very admire. I had the privilege. They invited me. I went and I looked and I saw. I'm going to take it to here. I'm going to propose. Let's see if I could. I'm lucky. I really want to see this in action. Chrome is built in with those AI as agents into the Chrome. So because today the big problem is monitoring browser activity. What you do on the browser is so unmonitorable. You cannot monitor them. You have a security stack installed on your desktop. It's gonna catch it only after something happened. It's gonna flag it. But you're copying, pasting a lot of different things on the browser. That's undetectable. And the good thing is you can just it's a subscription based. You can completely secure your browser, Chrome Enterprise. So.
Yeah, everything is moved to the cloud and moved to, back in the day, everything had to be local and you had these big engineering workstations with multiple processors and all this memory and storage and you did everything locally because you couldn't do it across the network. It wasn't fast enough. And as we've increased the speed on the network and we've increased the bandwidth and the horsepower on the servers in the cloud, you don't need them. I mean, I know my kids, going to school, they have a Chromebook and most of the things is done in their web browser. 95% of probably most everyday users, most of their time is spent in their browser. And that's not just browsing the internet. That's, Google Docs and Microsoft Office and 365 and all the things, right? So the more that you can lock it down and restrict it, it's no different than back in the day when we'd restrict which tools and applications a user had access to. Imagine if they only had access to one. They only had access to the browser and you had complete control over the browser. There was no other applications installed, right?
I would love to. Very excited about their Chrome security.
So with that, what's next 5 to 10 years? What are the things that you see coming? Maybe one thing that's concerning and one thing that's exciting that you see maybe coming up over the horizon in cyber.
You'll be amazed how this AI generated attacks are actually happening. Phishing. I have 2 incidents to actually mention. One was in UK. Are you aware? I think somebody deepfaked the CEO's voice in both cases. That's AI based.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong, they stole $25 million. UK, something big amount too. So it's AI, somebody deepfake CFOs and CEOs' voice. So that's going to grow. That'll grow.
Yeah. And that's hard to, the days of the print sending the email, send me money and I'll do, all that it's so much better now. The language, it doesn't sound like a, broken English, it looks like grammar, you, and now, like you said, voice and audio as well. And video even, I mean, it's going to be damn near impossible to detect. So you're going to have some controls to make sure that people don't get captured by that process.
Right. Yeah. So credential stealing, a lot of credential stealing actually going on. The basic is you really have to be up to date with your CVE patches because that's where the vulnerability is actually going eventually. Anyways, these are just the methods and the routes. Eventually, if your server is weak and you're vulnerable, you're not patching on time, you really have to up your security operations, game. You really have to be on top. You really have to be very large enterprises have big, heavy change management process. Things are actually happening to overcome those challenges. But again, CVEs are the biggest threat. If you can get up to that far and there's vulnerability wide open, of course, you're going to exploit. Because eventually it's the servers that's holding all the data and honey.
Everything else is just access in, and then that's how they do whatever they're going to do and take advantage of whatever they're going to take advantage of once they get to that place. Yeah.
If you look at the MITRE attack, those TTPs, tactical, they actually give you the whole pathway how to get to the server eventually. He came through there. He had tried to elevate this the prompt. He used this credential, that credential, eventually access the server.
Yeah, ultimately it goes back to what I said in the beginning. Like most of what we do in cybersecurity it's not sexy. It comes down to foundational things. Make sure you're patching. Make sure you're locking down your firewall.
Exactly.
Like, they're super simple things that are not super sexy. They're not crazy. All the AI in the world, if you're not patching your systems and you don't have your firewall locked down, doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter. Yeah, patch your servers.
And it's always going to be that way, right? It's that way in life. Like, you do everything, but the basics are the things that matter the most, right? Those are the biggest impact that you're going to have in your organization. Whether you're a super large company and you have millions and billions of dollars to invest in cyber, or you're a super small company and you don't have that much, if you focus on the foundational things, you're going to get the biggest return on your time and investment and money and dollars by doing those things right. And if you can only focus on those things and be really good at those things. And you're not going to be perfect, and there's no such thing as a perfectly secure environment. But if you're focusing on those foundational things, you're going to be a lot better off than your competitor that is focused on the whiz bangs and the other things, but they're not patching their systems.
True.
Absolutely. Well, awesome, sir. So, Sharad, I really appreciate your time today, sir. Enjoy the conversation. I agree. I love talking AI. I love getting different people's perspective. I appreciate you spending the time with me today and taking a risk and a chance. Just so the audience knows and everyone, I reach out to people randomly, right? I see people that are on LinkedIn. I see people that have a cyber background. A lot of people that I come on this podcast with, I've never engaged with before. But for me, this is a way to give back to the community. It's a way to give. I have no agenda here. I'm not trying to do anything or catch anyone. I want people to be comfortable to come out and share their knowledge, because everybody has a story. Everybody has experience that they can bring that can benefit other people. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation. It was really great to meet you. And hopefully we'll meet in person someday, grab a coffee, a donut, or whatever it may be in the future.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to do it. Yeah, I'm glad.
Absolutely. Have a good one, sir.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Protect It All, where we explore the crossroads of IT and OT cybersecurity. Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay ahead in this ever-evolving field. Until next time.